What date is it? What date did it say? The 12th? When is Valentine's Day? What date is Valentine's Day? I want to know what date it is because it's very important to me. I have made a resolution. In fact, I made this resolution on New Year's night, if you listen to me. I made this resolution that I would not continue unless I received at least 5 Valentines. No, I mean, a guy's got to know what is more important in this world today. After all, you know, let's face it, you read the books, you the novels, you go to the plays, you watch the television, and what is it? What is the universal elixir? L-U-V. That's right. The secret magic ingredient of everything. L-U-V. And by George, if I don't get any dough here on this station, if I don't get any credit here on this station, and if they don't cutting out little bits and pieces of my time and putting on the scores, the football results, the dog track results, who knows what else, at least I can get a little love. I'll tell you what, I don't ask you for much, but beginning next Thursday, I better be knee-deep in hearts and flowers, knee-deep in paper lace, knee-deep in Cupies, or Daddy ain't going to be here. Oh, no, I know a little bowling alley out in Allentown, Pennsylvania that I can pick up rather nicely.
Somebody
loves me.
I wonder who.
Bobble.
I wonder who she can be.
Oh, yeah. Oh, baby.
Somebody loves me. I wish I knew who she can be. Who is me?
Now, look, I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding. I mean, you know, you get this free every night, and you complain more about this than the stuff you pay like $20 for. When you go to some rotten joint, they serve you some water drinks, some old ginger ale, and some red eye, and then this half-baked comic gets up there, and you can't hear him through the yelling and the hollering. And you shell out the $20. What do? You tip the hat check girl a buck when you leave, and then you claim you had a good night. Yeah, great evening.
For every girl
you gripe constantly with me. Here I am, knocking myself out, wearing my clown hat every night. Wearing my goggles, sitting here in this terrible hot seat every night. Yeah, hold it there. Don't ask you for much. Not much. Knee deep in Valentine's starting Thursday. All right, hear that? That'll be your eyeballs. Knee deep in Valentine's starting Thursday. You've got your job cut out for you. You know, one of the great traumatic experiences of my life came as a result of a Valentine. Oh, boy. Phew. I better save that for Valentine's night. You're not ready for it yet. It was a gasser. I was 6. I remember distinctly it was 6. And I know why I was 6. I mean, I know exactly what time it was when this happened. No, I'm not going to tell the story tonight. You know, speaking of Valentine's, as we were, should I tell that story tonight? No, I better not. No, why not? Because I want to tell another story. That's why not. That's as good a reason as I can think of offhand. But it does paint a rather interesting picture of man's eternal desire to be loved. You know, almost insane desire there to have other people love you. And it's rarely ever connected with an insane desire to love other people. Well, I'll tell you about the unbelievable fiasco of the Valentine's Day party I went to when I was 6. There was this chick named Dawn Strickland. Whew. Oh, boy. I'm telling you, a 6-year-old matzo ball. She was incredible. I mean, 6. At the age of 6, my eyeballs would glaze when I would just walk past me there. It's funny. It was a traumatic experience. That's another story. But Dawn Strickland. Think of that name. Isn't that a magnificent name? Dawn Strickland. Well, shucks. Well, on the subject of traumas, this is WOR AM and FM New Yorkie. And we'll be here until trouble. Time Magazine, of all people, raves about Oliver Smith's sensational new production, Natural Affection. Hypnotic, devastating, brilliant, superlatively acted, shocking. And a few other things. What critics said about the tempestuous story of a man, a woman, her lover, and her son, now at the Booth Theater, West 54th Street. Well, let's see now. Well, we... that's known as culling the quotes. We can go a little further on that score. But, of course, you can slant news any direction you want to. Speaking of news, we have, as another one of our commercials tonight, we have the Paper Book Gallery. And they're one of the oldest sponsors we've had. In fact, I think it's about 3 years now. But the Paper Book Gallery now has records. And I don't know whether you've heard us talk about it, but they have an absolutely insane thing going on, and they're making it only for listeners. You know why? Marty claims, and I'll put this directly the way he put it, that listeners to the show built the Paper Book Gallery down on 6th Avenue. And he is giving them an unbelievable thing. To me, it is. They have two prices of records. They have over 11,000 classical, jazz, etc., monaural, stereo, hi-fi records. They have two prices, 97 cents and $1.97. They are giving two for one. In other words, if you buy one record, I wanted to do, and I'm going to do it now. Do you remember last week when we talked about the insanity of the automobile commercials? Where automobiles no longer are selling cars? Well, I don't know what it is. I guess it's just in our minds. We all like to believe that things change. Everybody likes to believe either things are getting better or getting rottener, depending on the condition of their knee joints, I presume. However, this is the case. I don't know of anybody, hardly anybody, ever really comes out and says, no, things are always the same. The amount of rottenness is always the same. The amount of goodness is always the same in the world. The amount of worry is always the same. In other words, it's a stable compound. I think life is a chemical compound. Life, the whole shamu, you know, the whole thing we're living in. I think it's a kind of chemical compound, and it's extremely stable. Stable in the chemical sense. It does not change. It does not change. In other words, H2O is a stable compound. Water. It's always H2O. There are always two molecules of hydrogen and one molecule of oxygen, H2O. It always remains that way. Now, the water takes many forms. You can boil it, and it begins to steam. Now, it's still H2O, even when it's a gas. Still H2O. It's not an easy thing to break down water. And then when it becomes ice, it's still H2O. It becomes snow, it's still H2O. It is due, resting on the golden point of a poet's pen, H2O. Two, hydrogen, one, oxygen. Got it? Okay, it's a very stable compound. So is life, even though it seems to change all the time, like snow, like ice, like dew, like, you know, name it. There's a lot of other stuff that water becomes. But it's always H2O. Now, other stuff gets mixed with it a lot of times. It's H2O. Doesn't make it. Put salt in it. H2O. You put the mix, you know, it doesn't matter. Put sugar in it. H2O. H2O. It's always H2O. Flavor it. Put a little cherry flavor in there. A little cola bean. You got H2O. Makes no difference. It still remains what it is. Water. Water. Okay? By the way, that's the way they pronounce it in southern Indiana. Water. Water. Hey, Bruno, will you get the word out and will you wash the dishes? That's a real Indiana talk there, wash the dishes. Well, I've just et. It's another expression. Somebody sent me, as a result of the discussion about the car commercial, now you guys listen to it here for a minute, it's about you guys, sent me about the car commercials a magnificent piece of, what is it? It's terrible poetry in a way. And yet in a way, it's fascinating poetry that was taken out of a book. It was found in a book written on a piece of paper. I will quote to you what the listener said. This is a copy from a small piece of paper that was tucked in page 23 of a book called The Laughing Muse by Arthur Gitterman, copyright 1915. And this is a little piece of paper that was taken out of a 1915 book. Entitled, A Quest of the Car. The Quest, an autobiographic ballad. Now, whither and whither, Lord Ronald, so gay? And whither so free and so far? I haste to the bounds of the great white way to choose me a motor car. And what of the car that you mean to buy, its name and its pedigree? Oh, ask of the wind and the sounding sky, but ask not that of me. For it may be a Leal or a Pupmobile, a Crag or a Biff McClung. For many, ye can, are the motormen and marvelous glib of tongue. It may be a Czar or a Quiggle car, or else, for aught I know, a Reinhard Fritz or a Donderblitz or a Clement Rochefoucauld. For vowed am I to a mission high, to search from east to west all lands that are, till I find the car which is approved the best. For I have sworn to my Lady Jane, by her milk-white hand so small, that none will I take for her sweet sake, until I have seen them all. Lord Ronald was come to a proud garage that stood by a dismal fen. And there, by the sound of their persiflage, he knew were the motormen. And one there was with the eagle eye, the face of the hatchet true, the shell-rimmed glass and the burglar tie, and the collar edged with blue. Oh, rubies four had the ring he wore, his coat had the latest shape, and his cheek, shaven clean by a razor keen, was the cheek of the brazen ape. He hailed the night by the fingers wan to where, with radiance crowned, a golden car was throned upon a turntable round. Oh, twice he bowed, and thrice he bowed before that golden chaise. Then, full, strong, and loud, and long, he sang its hymn of praise. Approach, approach, redoubted knight. Approach, O lucky neophyte, and view upon this wooden stage the wonder of the horseless age. The king, the ace, the jack, the queen of all that runs by gasoline. Invention's incandescent star, the unexampled Quiggle car. The motor first. I wish to state the cylinders. They number 8 with tungsten valves are cast en bloc. And steady, steady as a clock, this shaft of Higginbotham steel propels the patent caisson wheel, which cannot slip in mud or mire because it wears the Skidmore tire. Observe the sweep from front to rear. The spiral bevel axle gear, the floating axle intake pipe, the carburetor ogham type. Can future ages say too much about our multi-metal clutch, the brake that never disappoints, the banning universal joints? Remark our sudden stop. Oh, see our Spanish leather top, the easy swinging pinchless door, the Turkish rug upon the floor, the cushions neatly tilted there, are stuffed with hand-picked monkey hair. the Roland horn, the Oral Springs, the case for goggles, gloves and things, ignition, circulation, splash, transmission, spark plug, bumper, dash, magneto, radiator, feed, control equipment, starter, speed. He gasped. He clutched to the atmosphere. He fell to the parquet floor. Lord Ronald bequeathed him a silent tear and went to the shop next door. "Come hither," he cried to the man in charge, "O thou of the stately mien, and tell of the merits, both small and large, possessed of thy buzz machine. For far have I ridden, and far must I ride abroad on my nightly quest, to find, of all the cars in the world so wide, the car which is proved the best." The motorman rose from a mission bench that was of the quartered oak, and beating the air with a monkey wrench, his rhythmical speech, he spoke. They brag, yet do not heed, howe'er these others boast of safety, smoothness, speed, or trips from coast to coast. For even if they show a vase for silken flowers, they have not, well they know, a windshield like to ours. All others in the field lament, alack, alas, we cannot match this shield which is not made of glass. 'Tis cut of crystal clear that may not crack or dim. Who has it need not fear, for naught can injure him? Behold, you set it straight, or slant it as you please, at 7, 28, or 45 degrees. It stops the icy blast, repels the dusty gust. It makes the car run fast. It keeps the parts from rust. It keeps the engine clean. It keeps the tires sound. It saves the gasoline. It makes the wheels go round. With deep despairing groans, our rivals have to yield. Then buy the car that owns this Nay Plus Ultra Shield. Sore tempted was Ronald, but heaved a sigh and quoth as he left that hall, "Nay, never a motor I dare to buy until I have seen them all." And many and fair, aye, many and rare were the cars that his eyes had seen. When finally he entered a store with a rosewood floor, a place for a royal queen. Each lamp that glowed in that bright abode was pure as a maiden's tear. The curtains that rolled from their rods of gold were pink as a bashful ear of onyx, rich with the columns, which were smooth as the watered silk and lighted through with the faint far blue that shines on the city milk. And there, in the shade of its rose-leaf hood, at rest in a corner snug, a car that was built for a fairy stood, its wheels on a Persian rug. A squire rose up from a velvet seat and beamed on the worthy knight and chanted his tale in a voice as sweet as the trill of a lark in flight. "Rest, happy traveler, gaze upon the car that's called the Oberon." A beam of light, a winged flower, the car that moves by secret power. What need to praise its perfect parts? Address it gently, and it starts. Just speak to it in kindly wise, and swiftly, softly, off it flies, without a murmur, squeak, or jar, as silent as a shooting star. Ah, yes, it drifts along the fragrant miles, and when it sees a hill, it smiles a thing of joy and song and love. It sweeps along, 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 transporting them that ride within, afar from trouble, toil, and sin. He turned on Lord Ronald, his eyes so brown, and paused in his lilting lay. But Ronald had fallen adown, adown, had fallen adown, adown, a swooning in bliss away. They gathered him up, and they bore him home, six proper young men and tall. He opened one eye as the stair they clomb, and sighed, "I have seen them all." They laid him to rest in his downy bed to comfort his weary brain, and tender and cool on his fevered head was the hand of his beloved Lady Jane. And long, long did he fare in the realms of dream, anew on his nightly quest, and long did he ponder the mighty theme, which car shall be held the best? He pondered the words of the motormen, their reasons of pith and force. He visioned those glorious cars, and then he rose and bought a horse. And so concludeth The Quest of the Car, an autobiographic ballad. I'm sorry, I think that's a gas. You know, it's good to know that it was knee-deep even then. And it hasn't changed a bit. Not a bit. I think the one absolutely inspired line is this. Eddie, can you set up number two in there? Absolutely inspired line. Just completely inspired. It reminds me of Thunderbird Country. It reminds me of Thunderbird Country. You mean you don't read the ads? There's one commercial on the air that's absolutely insane. It shows this chick. They don't even show the cars anymore in the commercials. It shows this chick. You see, she's looking straight up, and you see the trees going and the sun. It says, "Only from the Whoopi-Mobile 8 can you see such a sight." Let me tell you, the tops went down on the 1907 Jowett's. Or did you know that out there in Detroit? And it was the same old sun. But listen, this absolutely insanely inspired line. And this was in 1915. Where is it again? It's a great thing. I would love to do this. You know what I'd like to do? Anybody out there got a good cheap recording company? I'd like to put this on an LP and send it to every car dealer in the country. I'm serious. Listen to this. What a line. What a line. All right. You ready, Eddie? Okay. Here we go. No, Ed. No. I'm sorry. I wanted number one. I'm sorry. That doesn't fit this line here at all. Now listen carefully. This is inspired. When it sees a hill, it smiles. A thing of joy and love and song. It sweeps along, 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 transporting them that ride within, afar, from trouble, toil, and sin. Yes, it's Thunderbird Country. The girls are forever beautiful, and men forever. Oh, gee whiz, what a gasp. Do any of you know who wrote that? This is just found on a piece of paper, and a lot of people are going to... No, first of all, please do not write me a letter. Invariably, after you read a piece of poetry on the air, there are 45 knotheads that write to you, "Dear Mr. Shepherd, I heard that poem. Would you please send me a copy?" No, I am not going to send you a copy. I'm sorry. And I don't know who wrote it. According to my correspondent, it was taken from a book. It was not taken from a book, actually. It was found in a book. And the book is of no consequence, actually, I suppose. I better read this here again carefully. Unless she didn't explain it to me, I will read her letter here. She says, "This is a copy from a small piece of paper tucked in page 23 of The Laughing Muse by Arthur Gitterman. Copyright 1915. Now, I don't understand whether she means... I just don't quite understand it. Now, maybe she means that Gitterman wrote this. I don't know. Gitterman was a poet of the period. It's difficult. Some people, you know, people have trouble communicating their thoughts via paper often. And what seems very simple to them is obviously all bollocksed up in reading. However, this piece of business here, this bit of poetry, because the reason I read it, and it's not a great piece of poetry at all, but it has a wild satirical sense of the various types of salesmen. One guy sticks strictly to talking double talk about the machine. Why the carburetor, all around the chase on wheels, blah, blah. He talks nothing about double talk about the machine. Then there's the other guy who deals strictly in snob, and then there's the guy who deals in dreams. Each very separately delineated in this piece of poetry. And by the way, each one still at work today. And how many guys have you ever seen standing outside of Friendly Fred's? Eddie? give me that. Hold it up there, because just hold it there. Here's what a beautiful description. Lord Ronald was come to a proud garage that stood by a dismal fen. There's a juxtaposition. Have you seen these used car joints out along Jersey? Yeah, this is the. Have you seen these used car joints out along through Jersey there by the salt marshes? Crisscrossed by pizza pie joints, overhung with instant seat cover emporia and great big drive-in theaters. And there it is. Listen, Lord Ronald was come to a proud garage that stood by a dismal fen. And there, by the sound of their persiflage, he knew were the motormen. And one there was, with the eagle eye, the face of the hatchet true, the shell-rimmed glass, and the burglar tie, and the collar edged with blue. Oh, rubies, four, had the ring he wore. His coat had the latest shape, and his cheek, shaven clean by a razor keen, was the cheek of the brazen ape. He hailed the night by the fingers wan, to where, with radiance crowned, a golden car was throned upon a turning table round. Oh, twice he bowed and thrice he bowed before that golden chaise. Then, full and strong and loud and long, he sang its hymn of praise. I mean, would you have guessed that they used turntables and the special of the day in 1915? I mean, you just wouldn't have. Nobody could have convinced me of that. And obviously the motor car, it must, after the second motor car was turned out, the first used car dealer showed up on the scene. With his gold teeth gleaming, his cigar puffing brightly, his eyes lit, and already he was probably named Friendly Fred. Your used car man, he's making nutsy deals. He's making nutty deals down there on the street. Oh, Nutty Fred. Yes, Nutty Fred. So believe me, Dad, just keep your knees loose. Once in a while, spit over your shoulder. You never know who you might hit.
WOR Radio, you're...
Oh, no!